welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus.
I'm pleased to have with me today in the studio Dr. Andrew Atsopardi. This isn't the first time Dr. Atsopardi has come to talk about his work, and I'm always very interested to hear about it, and I'm sure listeners are as well. Dr. Atsopardi is a senior lecturer at what is now the Department of Youth and Community Studies within the new Faculty for Social Wellbeing. This is, I think, the first time that I'm actually mentioning this new faculty on the radio, and I'm sure there'll be other academics from the faculty who will be sitting in your chair on other occasions during this semester. Before we talk about this book which you've edited with Dr. Sean Gregg, Inclusive Communities, and there's a lot to say about that, perhaps you could just put your department in context, just to talk a little bit about the work you do within the department with your graduates, and maybe you have postgraduate students as well.
Yes, we do. First of all, thank you, Tricia. The Department of Youth and Community Studies in different formats has been around at university for, I would say, 15 or 16 years. It started up with Dr. Tony Atsopardi, not a relative. Tony was very much involved in youth. It started as a program, it moved into an institute, then it developed into a department. And nowadays, for these last couple of years, for these last number of years, we've been functioning as a department within the Faculty of Education. But with the recently established Faculty for Social Wellbeing, we felt as a staff, the rectorate, the university felt that it should be one of the departments that moves into this new Faculty for Social Wellbeing, which is a very important milestone when it comes to academia, because we have managed to converge a number of departments who are interested in looking at the person, looking at the individual from different perspectives, and we are together in this faculty. There's a department of psychology, the recently established department of counseling. There's a department of the family. So there are a number of departments that have a common interest and a lot in common as well. The department functions like any other department. We offer undergraduate courses, we offer a BA in Youth and Community Studies, we offer our master's as well, a master's in Youth and Community Studies. Both courses are quite popular with students. Actually, it must be our fifth or sixth cohort that we're running when it comes to the master's. The BA we run every year. The master's, we run it basically once every, on alternate years. We started every 2 years. I also have a PhD student as well. So it's a department that, even though we're small in number, but we are very much involved in researching youth. But not only, we also look at community even in the broader sense. And I think the roots of this book was actually something that Sean Gregg, a colleague and a friend, he's an academic at Manchester Metropolitan University, where we thought, listen, we need a text which is useful for students, because we wanted a text for students so that they could use. I'm a strong believer that we need to give students as much material as possible, and we thought that we need to explore this issue, and it took us almost 2 years to work on this project, and we are quite pleased with the reviews we get and with the way this book is being taken on board by a number of university apart from Malta.
Well, I can say that I found the information about it on Amazon, so yes. I can hint to our listeners that they can also find the information on Amazon. So that was what prompted you to write the book? that you wanted to give something in the hands of your of
and
your
because
students?
We're passionate about community as well. Both Sean and myself are involved in community. What we have in common is our interest, our passion, our almost fixation with the area of disability. With Sean, it's more of a global, more of a global discourse and more of a post-colonial orientation. With me, it's more on the activist side of disability. So that is something that we have also in common. We had common, actually, we also had in common our doctoral supervisor. So there's a lot in common, but we work in different university. So our interest was want to ask what is, I mean, where do we stand with community, and where do we stand with inclusive communities? Do I have inclusive communities? Really interesting.
I was going to say there are some of these buzzwords. I don't want to sound derogatory at all. Don't get me wrong, but you know there are certain expressions which one tends to hear time and time again, and you wonder exactly what is behind them. So perhaps you could give your rendering of what an inclusive community is all about.
The thing is that. Most of the times in such texts, sort of people expect answers, and really and truly we tried to prepare for that, because our sort of little subtitle is a critical reader. So we wanted to ask a lot of questions. And the reason is because I don't think there is this universal term called inclusion, and there is this accepted term all over the globe when it comes to the fact that we need communities that are inclusive, but our interpretations of how we arrive to that reality or to that phenomenon is a completely different experience. Let me give you a very simple example. For example, in Malta, if we take inclusive communities within the context of disability, and this book does not just deal with disability, but with a number of minority issues. But if you take this example, for example, in Malta, when they talk about inclusion and inclusive communities, usually we're referring to the notion of inclusive education, so it's inclusion within schools. We are gradually and very slowly starting to talk about inclusion in the community via employment. We are talking about also relationships. We are talking about people accessing the social services and the health services. When it comes, for example, to Guatemala, where Sean does a lot of work, when he talks about inclusive communities in relation to disability, it's about trying to find rehabilitative services, trying to collect money, try to raise money so that you can buy prostheses, you can buy equipment, you can buy wheelchairs, you can buy crutches. So people are at different stages. For example, in a number of African countries, you would find that inclusive communities in relation to disabilities about the responsibility of the village towards the disabled person. So what we realize in this book, and we realize this very early on, is that the notion of inclusion, whilst it is an accepted notion, whilst it's a target for most communities and for most societies, yet people are living towards or working towards this particular notion in different ways.
So you mentioned a couple of the themes that are mentioned in this book. I mean, disability being one of them. What are the other sort of general themes that are taken up by the writers of the of the articles?
Well, I'd like to point out, actually, you reminded me, because it is an edited book, so we have a whole array of authors and people who know even a little about community and inclusion would know people like Margaret Ledwitt. She's a retired professor, but of international standing. People are like Mark Vickers from Victoria University in Australia. It is a series. It's a book part of a series of Roger Slee, who is a renowned professor in the UK and in Australia. So we have a wide array of people who are coming from different experiences. For example, Mark Vickers talks a lot about LGBT, And he talks about his story and how this story helps him to understand where we stand with inclusion. Having these people on board was fantastic, apart from having a number of local academics, because it is something I'm always passionate about, that in any book I edit, I must have academics locally who have maybe are not as popular, but they are as good and possibly even better than other academics that we tend to celebrate. So that is a must. That's something that you'll find in every book I edit. But there are some important themes. The themes is that we're talking about understanding boundaries. In this particular book, we try to understand boundaries. We try to understand the engagement of the wider community in relation to particular populations. How do people relate to gay people? How do people relate to the sexuality and to the way they express themselves and the way they live? How do people relate to physical accessibility? And one of the conclusions that sort of transpires, well, it sort of seeps through the whole book, is that inclusion can only happen if the wider community is involved, and if the wider community understands that people should live together. And the thing is that the more time passes, the more people are living together in terms of physically. We have to live together. We are living
especially in this little
island. But this debate, this famous Tony's debate between Gemeinschaft and Gesellschaft, trying to understand that it's not just living together, but living with each other, is something that we need to reinvent, to use a term that you were using before starting. We need to reinvent community. We need to reinvent community in terms of the way the new influences that are, the new phenomenon of, for example, of technology. There's a chapter, a very good chapter actually, by Alex Grech, who is about to get his doctorate as well. And he talks about social media, talks about the internet, he talks about virtual communities and how these can respond to the needs. So it's not just, I think it's an issue of inviting the broader community to take on responsibility.
And looking perhaps also to those who are, as I'm reading in the text here, disenfranchised groups, to perhaps also understand their own potential within the community, and getting other people in the community who are more used to ruling the roost to recognizing their potential as well.
Yes. What you've mentioned here is another very important debate. It's a debate, for example, that it was debated by Marilyn Clark and her debate around issues of stigma. Maria Pisani also discussed this as well when it comes to issue of migration. The thing is that the dilemma I have is that I question, we've questioned in this book whether there is a concerted effort, almost in Malta we say attapposta, on purpose, that we want to exclude people, that it comes natural to sort of sift whatever is not acceptable in terms of the standards or the characteristics that we develop in our communities. So what worries me is not that because what happens most of the time, people end up trying to prove themselves, and truly they don't need to. I don't need to prove myself. I just get on with my business. I do my work. I do my research. I do my teaching, and I just get on with it. If it's disabled people, if it's gay people, they have to keep asking these hidden questions: why are you doing this? What do you think? How do you have sex? And how do you go from one place to another? And it's as if people need to prove themselves all the time, or people need to justify why they should be part of the community. And this book really challenges this notion it's not true that we do not have inclusive community. It's not true that our institutions are far from creating the appropriate scenarios to ensure that this inclusion happens. We shouldn't, really and truly, this book is saying we shouldn't be talking about inclusion. We shouldn't be talking about having inclusive communities, because if we have inclusive communities, there's nothing to talk about. And yet we need to talk about it. And I've realized that we need to talk even more about it, actually.
One thing I, looking at it, I'm not an outsider anymore, of course, I've lived here for many years, but one of the things that had struck me when I first came to live here was the issue of comfort zones. And this perhaps hinders the development of inclusiveness.
I think the notion, the whole concept of people living together is changing. People do not live with each other and together in neighborhoods the way that I know when I was a little boy, where the neighbors, the families across the road, the people who live around in the block, and you're going for a nanny and to somebody to get your mother sends you to get a piece of lemon or some tinned milk or whatever. So if you knock on the door of somebody and ask them for a piece of lemon, they'll probably send you to a number of places and you'd still end up without a lemon. And the thing is that but we have a new way of living. We live together in cyberspace. We live together via internet, via social media. We live together in our places of work. We spend a lot of time. So there are different ways how we live together. The truth of the matter, however, is that as our society is developing, it seems that a lot of people are trailing behind, and a number of people whom we label as being vulnerable groups end up because they either don't have access to technology, or else they don't have the social capital or the financial capital, end up isolated because the old way of doing community has changed. And I think we haven't yet found a way where everybody can live together. I think, well, that's what we sort of came up with in this book.
Yes, the question, the book obviously begs the question, if inclusive communities are indeed a good thing mm-hmm. for society, let's presume for a moment, though I imagine mm-hmm. maybe there are people who would argue in other ways
that's
as
right,
well,
definitely.
But so let's presume for a moment that they are a good phenomenon. How are we going to actually reach that goal? Is it going to be bottom up, top down? Is it going to be a mixture of the two? Mm-hmm. I'm terribly keen on the development of civil society, something I've sort of, in a small way, been involved with all the time I've been in Malta. And I personally feel that the civil society has an enormous role to play in that, creating the gel between zones.
I think that we propose three sort of things that we need to do, or maybe four. Four, I would say. I would say, first of all, we are advocating and encouraging, and people who have written here are mostly involved in the area. So if there's somebody talking about disability, they are actually involved in this sector. If there's somebody talking about gay issues or asylum seeker issues, they are involved. So what we sort of propose are four basic things. The first is that we propose that we need to see more activism. I think the agenda has been hijacked by policymakers and politicians, not only locally, even locally, but not only even abroad. And we now know the language of these groups, so we can use appropriate language vis-a-vis women and feminist issues, but really and truly we see that women are still struggling in our society. Not because they are incapable, it's because they don't have equal opportunities. So ensuring that there is activism, and activism by the people who are directly affected, is crucial. And I think that needs a bit of a revamp, because some of the groups are some of the populations, the vulnerable, the minorities in our communities have been put aside. Then there are two or three other things. The other one is, I would say, policy. We need to ensure that we have policy, but policy that is attached to practice. It's not about having documents, but about having a vision, a realistic vision, and having practical issues on how to respond to that policy. And another issue, which obviously comes with my background and which one's background, is that we need to see more engagement by the academic community. I think academia has a very important role, not to simply take care of its own needs, not to sort of publish books and stuff that are intended only so that you get your professorship, or so that you get your pay rise, or so that you get your nice books on the shelves. I think that is one of them, possibly one of them. It's not really important to me, but that is possibly one of the important things. But it's also about responding to what society needs in terms of research, in terms of information, in terms of reflection, in terms of asking critical questions. And what we are sort of, even this book talks a bit about that as well, is that we're a bit afraid that academia has become too much of a discipline, too much of a profession, too much of something that is something in its own self. It's whilst we think that it should be the continuation of work that is being done in the community, at these different levels.
Of course, the word community itself, rivers of ink have been spilt on describing what communities are. And here you've been dealing with inclusive communities in general. And that must have been quite an ambitious way of doing things, really, because you didn't home in on one particular area of community. So you're looking at the broad spectrum. Yes.
Because our initially, I remember our first meeting was in the senior common room at university, and I remember telling Sean, discussing with Sean, that we need a book that sort of outlines a number of minorities, and sort of every minority talks or discusses what the issues, the important issues are. But we realized that would sort of fragment the whole issue. Because it's not about, really and truly, what we started finding out, that it isn't about disability, it isn't about gay and lesbian issues, it isn't about feminist issues. There are a number of other underlying issues that we've been talking about that are common to all. So we sort of reversed the whole notion of the book, and we started talking about what are the major, or what are the changes that we need to see. And one of the things, the choice of inclusive communities, not inclusive societies, is in fact because we wanted to make it clear that we wanted to reinvent, I'm going to use this word again, to reinvent our communities. Our communities are still valid. We still need a community. We still need, and community has a tone of intimacy, of exchange, of visibility, where people can see each other's faces and not numbers and PIN numbers and codes and passwords, but we can actually engage with each other. And it can be done. And technology, for example, and internet and all are ways where we can do that. So there's no reason why we can't find new ways of how to do community. So the choice was a deliberate choice, yes.
But now I gather you're actually going to move on to a follow-up publication.
Well, at the stage, Sean is working on another piece of work, and I'm working on another piece of work. So even though we correspond and we talk regularly, but we're working on two different projects. I'm actually with the same publisher, with Sense, I'm looking at now how youths are responding to community. So the idea is to have sort of a sister text, another text, where instead of looking just at inclusive communities, looking at inclusive communities in the broad sense, I will be zooming in with a number of contributors. Once again, contributors coming from all over the world, from the United States, from Canada, from a number of United States universities, from a number of places in Canada, from Japan, from Africa, and also from Malta and Australia. So we have a number of contributors who are sort of looking at now how youth can respond to their communities. And it's turning out to be quite an interesting piece of work.
I can imagine. Well, I look forward to welcoming you again on the program to tell us about this new book, which has a title already, or a working title?
Working title is Youth Responding in the Community, but that is a working title. It will be tweaked a bit.
We come to the end of our time. Thank you very much, Dr. Andras of Paradis, for coming to the studio today to talk about your new book, which you have edited with Dr. Sean Gregg, Inclusive Communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.